Hello and welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast. When the comics aren't enough and you need a little extra fix. I'm your host, JJ Hodges, and this podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network. Go to batman-on-film.com for all the latest, greatest, Batmaniest news that your heart desires. Hey, that one wasn't that bad this time. Usually they're terrible. Anyway, joining me today for our Summer of Superman series is none other than Let's Go himself, Mr. Justin Kowalski. Sir, how the heck are you today?
I'm doing quite well. I'm in a nondescript time somewhere in the year of 2023. Who knows? But it is the summer of Superman, I'll tell you that. It couldn't get more summery today.
I am so excited about this conversation today. So we're talking Dark Knight over Metropolis,
yes.
And you are very much Batmaned up with your hat and the decor.
I am. My corner of the world here. I have a Superman around here somewhere.
I thought your hat was the Batman for a second.
No,
the,
it's just like a classic 60s Batman hat here.
I dig it.
Yeah.
For a second, like the logo looked like the cartoon, the Batman.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Well, it does have that like bat behind it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fitting for today's conversation.
Which is
interesting because so these three issues that we're talking about today, Dark Knight over Metropolis, very clearly inspired the world's finest first team up in the animated series with Superman and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as I got a little bit of dark, I don't want to put it, Batman v Superman vibes a little bit, like, you know, Goyer and Terrio must have had the party scene at least.
Yeah. There's definitely some inspirations. It's funny, I mean, I don't know how you want to jump in, but there are definitely I feel there's some inspirations in the, because there's three parts. This went through Superman, it went through Adventures of Superman, and ended in Action Comics.
Mm-hmm.
As those comics did back in, I think this was 91, 90, 91.
Oh yeah.
I remember. That's old, but I feel like that first issue, it evoked a lot of Batman 89.
I thought so too.
You know what I'm saying? With Cat Grant and her son and Gangbuster.
Yeah.
You know, it was like this, there was a similar like vibe, almost like it's almost kind of on the nose, but it was because I think it was setting, there was a lot going on in that scene. It was like setting up like, oh, Batman's watching this family, you know, go
right
through something similar. And then there's even some lines that sound kind of like, oh, that's inspired by, you know,
right. So. I thought that too. And I think, you know, you're saying it being on the nose with Jerry Ordway writing and drawing that issue, who, you know, through the Batman 89 comic adaptation, which weren't you on that episode of the book Batman book club?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know this.
I would have been really embarrassed if you said no. I'm like, well, there's some snip that happened in there. it's very obvious. And but I like that because I remember because I, you know, I read it a couple of times. And even the second time I read it, I was like, oh, that's right. It's not Batman in the beginning of this. And of course it isn't. It's Superman's book.
But they really leaned into it, though.
He's covered in shadow. And because my first thought was when, you know, the guy shoots at him and Superman catches the bullet. My first thought was like, Batman can't do that. That's weird. And then I was like, oh, that's right. It's Superman. Of course, we're reading a Superman book. What the hell's the matter with me?
That's funny.
So what made you choose this story over, like, you know, the 85 years of history with Superman?
Yeah, sorry, I know if you see me glancing because I'm scrolling through my my Hoopla app, like Ryan Lauer. I'm going through Hoopla to go through this because there's no way I was going to dig through all these boxes to go to get it. When you asked, I was like, man, what is a Superman story that pops out to me that probably no one's going to pick?
Sure.
I'm notorious for picking like really obscure things, but I don't think the story is that obscure, but I don't think it's a Superman story where people are like, oh, Here's the one that I love. Like the other one I would have picked was Panic in the Sky. I wanted to get that. I don't know if you've read that. It's kind of a precursor to Superman leading the Justice League. And I call this like the Byrne era. I think anything from Man of Steel up to, you know, the Death and Return of Superman is kind of like this really great chunk of Superman saga. Even though it extends forward, it goes on beyond that. But I think that was like the kind of the golden age of like modern Superman storytelling. Just the better thing to be calling it would be the Byrne era / Triangle era.
Yeah.
And they would have the triangles, which is weird why they didn't just make Superman shields, but whatever. Like, whatever.
It's right there. Just bend the edge a little bit.
But that was my favorite era of Superman stories. And when this came out, I mean, it was the height of me still just in the afterglow. I mean, still of Batman. And it was like, oh, okay, Batman's in Superman in a Superman comic. And it was like, oh, cool. I was so excited to see, you know, Batman show up. And I remember I grabbed one of these issues. And when you're a kid, it's so hard to go to the comic book store. And so if you miss an issue of a comic, you're pretty much hosed. You're never going to get, you know, unless like you lucked out. And I just remember grabbing the middle issue, which was the Adventures of Superman issue. And it had if you're familiar with Dan Jurgens, by the way, I love his rendition of Batman in this book. Like his modern Batman doesn't look like this. It's a little more, he's a little shortier. He seems a little more gruff. And I was just like, well, what's going on with the story? Why is Batman in this? And, you know, he's investigating this crime. This guy, you know, has the ring, the kryptonite ring that Lex Luthor had. And there's a whole much more backstory of this. Like just the understanding of like, oh, Lex Luthor, he had a synthetic kryptonite ring. He had cancer. He lost his hand. It's been stored away in his, like you kind of mentioned BVS, like he has this like place where the kryptonite is stored. Right.
Right.
So there's definitely, man, now that you said that, my brain's like scrambling. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many homages to that. but yeah, so I actually found the other issue. So I didn't know what was going on. And the comic book guy told me, oh, you have to get Superman. I didn't know there was like five different Superman comic books. You know, it was just I'm learning, man. I didn't know all this stuff.
Sure.
And so it was just so cool to see like, oh, Batman and Superman together. Right. And just, you know, when you're a kid, it's so much more magical, but this whole story to kind of, put like the importance of it, this storyline is what gives, that it gets Batman that kryptonite ring.
Yeah.
Which is huge in modern, like, the superhero stories, like especially the relationship of Batman and Superman birthed in like the post-crisis is like, you know, Batman has a kryptonite ring to take out Superman. And they've used that a few times. Like, you know, they used it in Dark Knight Returns, right? But this is kind of like, you know, retrofitting that story into a modern thing. Like, oh, this is how he got the ring, right?
Right.
And it's come up a few times like in other stories, you know.
Like Hush.
Hush, and like, I think it came up in like the Armageddon 2000 like crossover. I don't know if you read that, but one of my favorite DC crossovers of the 90s. It's so goofy, but anyways, it was such a fun read, especially then. You know, reading now, like I'm like, man, there's so much expository dialogue. You know, you just don't catch as a kid, but there's something sweet about the storytelling, and especially like, you know, three different teams, you know, working on it. Like it was still cohesive. It didn't feel, there was no jumps or jumbles that made you feel disconnected. I'm like, okay, the art's different. Other than that, they nailed the characters in this book, you know? They even filled in the gaps for things you were like, what's going on? And I actually started reading, because Garrett's been reading, if you all know Garrett Grev, AKA Minnesota's Finest. he's been reading these John Byrne Man of Steel. And when I say John Byrne, I'm including Jerry Ordway, Dan Jurgens, everybody who's like on these books. But these Man of Steel collections, which is, again, classic Superman era. And so I started reading, too. I was like, I'm going to get on Hoopla and read these. And so in this story, it's referring to I read the story where they're talking about this lady who tried to kill Clark Kent with a kryptonite ring. Right.
Right. Right.
So they allude to that. And they even kind of like they actually closed the door on that story well in this one. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of cool. Like, oh, I didn't know this for like years. I get it. Cause I didn't read the, like those early issues. I only have a few of them that I read like maybe the first 15 of Byrne, and then that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, it was really cool to make that connection. And so that's what I love about going back and reading some of these older books. They still work really well. And I almost feel like the character and the supporting cast is so much more, it's so much richer. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have Gangbuster and you have all the stuff going on at LexCorp and you have Inner Gang, and it's super complex, but like, it's not hard to follow. And I'm like, man, the blueprint for an amazing movie is here. You know,
I thought the same thing. There's quite a lot that goes on in it. And it's funny because like the last half of the third chapter is really just Batman explaining the Amanda McCoy situation and saying, like, well, here's how she figured out this and this is what happened. And it's funny you say like expository dialogue. And it's like, I feel like it goes down a little bit smoother because I can't help but hear Kevin Conroy in my head. Mm. So I'm just like, well, it's, you know, like I could listen to Kevin Conroy all day, you know, like I'll try and like, you know, to, I'll have the, cause I actually watched The World's Finest crossover. Cause I was like, oh, you know, it reminds me a lot of that. I'm going to watch that again. So I was watching it and I was like, well, let me look over the book again before we record. And then I was like, I have to pause it because Kevin's talking. I can't concentrate on anything else.
I wanted to read before we got on it and get a chance was the Man of Steel miniseries issues when Batman, I just read it not too long ago. Cause I did it with, I was on Comic Binge with Paul Herman and we talked about some of those books and the issue where Batman shows up is a little similar to The World's Finest again. All those things just kind of got coalesced into this like idea of how they first met. And I'm like, cause Superman refers to it like, oh, he figured out who I was and you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that there's a, you know, in the Byrne stuff and even a little bit in this, although it's kind of quote unquote resolved, right? Is that there's the antagonism there. Like, you know, Superman's like, I don't like how you do things, and Batman's like, well, the way you do things doesn't get things done, you know? And it makes a lot of sense for those characters because, you know, in the 50s and 60s, they were just best buddies hanging out, like
chums.
Playing baseball.
surfing, all the things that they're doing.
So it makes sense that there, you know, there'd be some, you know, a clash of ideologies there. Yeah. And I like seeing that in here because it just, you know, it makes the character feel that much more real. And it adds a little bit of dramatic weight to it because, you know, you have Batman being like, well, we're going to have to break into Luthor's office. And Superman's like, that's not how we do things. And Batman's like, you do now. And I like that they, you know, it's funny because like we get Superman kind of learning on the fly how to be a little bit more stealthy, right? Like he like blows out the camera with his heat vision. And even like in the banquet scene or the party scene, he overheats the pool so it, you know, it fogs everywhere.
Yeah, that was cool.
Really cool. And you know, and it's such a cheesy line, but so cool. And you know, the Inner Gang is like, oh, I can't see anything in front of me, and Superman's like, that's the idea. You know?
Yeah.
and it's like, oh, okay. So he's learning, you know, he's not just going, oh, I don't like how you do things, Batman. He's very much like, oh, okay, I get why you do the things you do. And same with Batman, when, you know, I like that the whole story, he has the kryptonite ring and but he never feels like he needs to use it. He has it, but he's just like, I'll hang on to it. And then at the end of it, when he confesses and says, yeah, I had this the whole time, but, you know, I know I didn't need it against you because you're not a bad person. Yeah. That to me was like, oh, that's really cool. And
well, and then, they telegraphed that really well with him, Batman. It's like, I know Batman knows, but he was kind of testing him like, oh, you didn't do this? Like when why did she die? Did you do that? You had reason. He was like, I'm not even going to answer that, you know?
Right.
And he kept challenging, oh, I thought you would kill Luther. And he's like, you know, no. Like Superman keeps proving that he does not need to be taken out. You know, Batman's learning like, okay, who this is. Cause remember this is the beginning of like the DC universe post crisis. Like Superman's still fresh. You know, these characters are still pretty, I mean, the crisis timeline is weird, like based on like, you know, how long people have been around. You just have to accept whatever, the 10 year rule or something. But, Superman's still pretty new at what he's doing, and you know, he's learning, like, oh shoot, Lex Luthor is a total butthole. Like, I gotta, like, I, that's who this guy is. And he, the corruptness of Inner Gang, and which is great. Batman's like, why is it taking you so long to shut down Inner Gang? Like, I gotta get involved here, right? Just them learning their dynamics is so cool in this, I think this is actually, like, I think it's a more important, you know, crossover than I'm thinking now that we're talking about it. It's really like a relationship definer for who these characters are. It's where they begin to trust each other and know each other. So
it definitely is. And I like that the focus is on the two of them, and you have these kind of wacky villains throughout, like Luther is a more of a supporting character. He's not even the villain.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that's also important because, you know, we watch the movies and the cartoons, like Lex Luthor is, you know, like in Smallville, right? He's always there. You know, he's a big part of the Superman lore. But it's nice when it's like, well, he doesn't need to be the only villain or the only antagonist. And I like that, you know, this calls back to a little bit of Burn when, you know, there's the computer screen that the one cover is Clark Kent and Superman.
Yeah.
And I like that Lex is so arrogant that he's like, no way. No. There's no way Superman would just act like a normal person. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I love that too. I love that conceit that, like, why would Superman be anybody else?
Right.
But also, why are you trying to figure out who he is?
You know, like, it almost would make more sense to him if Superman was like a Bruce Wayne, right? Or something like that. And it's funny because the, you know, him losing his hand to the kryptonite ring was something that I was thinking about when I was reading it. Did you watch Smallville at all?
Yeah, I watched the first, like, I think I got up into they started working for the Daily Planet. And then when he became like the Matrix style, like when he had the black, like, I think I stopped when he started wearing trench coats. But then I came back for the end. So I missed 2 years or something like that. Whatever.
Well, I mean, it's just, there's plenty to go around. So.
Yeah.
But when Lex has his clone body and he comes back, his hand is messed up because of the kryptonite ring.
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny to me because I was like, you know, he never actually really wore that except in one episode of the TV show and back in like season four. But they like call back to that idea of Lex Luthor having a, you know, screwed up hand because, you know, he has the kryptonite ring and obviously inspired by this. And I remember you know, when I was reading it, I was thinking about that, going, I was like, yeah, but like I kinda dig that Luthor is like, oh, I'm gonna carry this around with me. And they did it on the Justice League animated series. He's like, I've had this chunk of kryptonite for years and it gives them cancer, and you know, and of course, just being a totally normal, rational human being, he blames Superman. It's stuff like that I'm like, no, I dig that about Lex Luthor. Kind of he has that paranoia about it. Like, well, I'll keep this on me at all times, and then not realizing that it's killing him. You know, it's kind of a hoist it on your own petard kind of thing, I guess. You know,
I mean, and then how it eventually does, like, ravage his body. And then he has to clone himself.
I think Zaki Hassan pointed out, like, they saved Superman, or they saved Lex Luthor's brain, was a story in the early 90s.
Oh yeah. And then remember, how are you aware of, like, all the, it's like, it's, it can be very, if you're not aware of these Superman comics, like how things went down, and you just, like, start reading things like the death of Superman, you're like, who's this redhead dude dating Supergirl? I mean, they let it be known he's Australian. Oh, it's Lex Luthor's son, Lex Luthor II, and it's totally, it's just this whole weird, like, he cloned his body, and, you know, it's such a wild, like, soap opera, like, storyline, you know. To where, I mean, even when he becomes the president, you're like, this is the guy that was the clone, and it all ended up like, actually, yeah, I cloned myself. I'm running for the president now. You've got a wild story, man. It's all good.
It is super bizarre. And I remember kind of picking up comics here and there when I was a kid, and just and being like in the 90s, and just going like, what the heck? You know, like, and then like Lex Luthor running for president. I remember my first thought being like, Yeah, but he's not going to win, not realizing that, oh wait, like these writers
Oh
are a lot
man,
smarter than my,
no
8-year-old
way.
brain.
One of the greatest like story flips ever. It was so cool, man. They had some cool stories that happened, you know. But yeah. Anywho, sorry, I don't mean to take us off the we're off
Oh
the deep end of this.
but I love that when we get it's kind of a deep cut. Slam Bradley is in the
Oh yeah,
story,
okay. I'm
right?
glad. Yeah, that's right.
Like
Wild.
the first ever character from Detective Comics, I think, in
Yeah, he
Detective
was
Comics.
detective number one. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember he was in an episode of Batwoman in season one, and it was like this big joke that he pushed Batwoman out of the way of a moving car or truck or something, and all these people were like, "Kiss him, kiss him," and I was just like, "This is really stupid." I was just like, look, I don't mind this show, but the whole point of that episode was to get Batwoman to come out and say, "Oh, I'm gay," and I was like, okay, first of all, I don't know if I was being rescued by Batwoman, my first thought wouldn't be, I wonder if she's straight,
Right, you're
I
on.
mean,
I'm glad I'm
I get the representation side of it, but the Slam Bradley character in that universe is used as a device for just. It was silliness to me. I mean, it was just like, all right, this character can be kind of cool, and I haven't read it yet, but I know Lauer's a big fan of Gotham City Year One, and he's a big character in that.
yeah. This was a pretty like his use in here. It was kind of like, oh, you're using a character from sorry, my desk is shaking here. You're using a character from like DC history. There were some hardcore Dick Tracy profile shots of him. I don't know if you remember, like in the Ordway part of the story. I'm like, oh, you're really making him like the hard nosed. I'm trying to pull up the panel here. Like detective here. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know what happened to Slam Bradley after this. The first time I really experienced him was in the Catwoman comic book. He was a part of that. Yeah, and he's part of the new Gotham City Year One thing. So it's cool when he comes around. It reading this, I don't remember that it was Slam Bradley. So rereading it, I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, came from
It
got he had some Gotham City history and you know.
I like I really appreciate deep cuts like that because
Yeah.
it shows me that these guys do their not just do their homework, but they're actual fans, right? Like,
Yeah.
hey, wouldn't it be cool if we throw him in here? And it doesn't have to be anything super significant other than just like a fun nod to the fans, which I'm
Yeah.
all about.
Oh, yeah.
And even like Lex Luthor, like post-Crisis, right, was remodeled, instead of being an evil scientist, he's like a billionaire,
Yeah.
and he not so subtly looks like Donald Trump,
Yeah,
especially
right.
in these issues. I was
Oh
reading it
yeah.
going, oh, that's his face right there, I
Oh,
recognize
that's totally yeah, that's
it.
totally yeah, there's definitely some Trumpiness in some of Luthor's portrayals, you know.
But I'd argue that Luther is smarter. Anyway,
Oh, hey, there you go.
he knew how not to get caught. Anyway,
Yeah. Oh, incredible ring. I have incredible ring. It's great.
it's like this is
Incredible. Best ring
the
ever. Won't give you hand cancer.
greatest
I
ring.
blame
Can't cancer.
Superman. I blame him. It was his fault.
Well,
Sorry.
I mean, Superman might as well be a Democrat to him.
Yeah. I'm a champ.
Anyway, off of the topical stuff. I really do love that seeing how Batman and Superman are drawn in this very classic, Batman in the gray and blue, and it's like there's something about that where, I think we've talked in our group chats, like it was cool seeing like Affleck in the gray and blue in the Flash trailer and
Oh
everything,
yeah.
and it's just like I don't think that ever could work in live action, but man, does it look awesome in the comic
Man,
books, you know?
I feel like it can, but that's a whole other conversation. So
Well,
I wanted to bring something up to you. So one of the
sure.
things that I liked was when they're at the whatever the fundraiser, the Zenith Awards, right? That Lex
Yeah.
Luthor is sponsoring. So Bruce Wayne's there and Clark Kent, and they're both wearing like tuxedos. There's nothing really differentiating them except the color of blue. It feels like it matches their suits. like the blue of their bow ties.
Yep.
Though in one scene, like, I don't know how it is. Like, you know, again, I didn't pull my comic book out, but Bruce Wayne's tie switches from red to blue. It was a coloring error.
Yeah.
It really bugged. I was like, wait, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, if you're not looking at the faces, like the glasses for Clark is what gives him away. But other than that, it's like pretty much the same exact suit.
It's definitely the same suit, you know. Bruce doesn't have a pocket square, but they both have cummerbunds on and
Yeah, very, very classic. and it is, and I love that, Lex even shows up and says, "Oh, it's Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, like two of my favorite people," or whatever he
yeah.
says there. And it did make me think of BVS, it's like,
Oh, for sure, for
oh,
sure.
I love bringing people together. And it's just funny looking at in that triangle in the film, right? Where it's like, man, these guys tower over this little man.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe Eisenberg's just a regular sized person and Affleck and Cavill are just giants among men.
That's true. They are like 6'4" gods.
I do maintain, and I've said this several times on the show, that Henry Cavill was created in a Warner Brothers lab specifically to be Superman. Because
Yeah.
he looks exactly like a Dan Jurgens drawing,
Oh, yeah. Except, you know, they botched it.
Well, that's
Wah, wah. So,
oh, you sons of bitches.
dun
And
dun dun.
then The Rock botched it even more.
Oh,
Oh
goodness,
boy.
The Rock.
What is the matter with you? You couldn't
Man.
just play nice with Shazam anyway. But yeah, I like that, Bruce does have the, and I think this is something that like Frank Miller kind of started doing like year one and everything, making Bruce Wayne just kind of a, just kind of a sleaze ball a little bit, right? Lois is like, oh, you're here by yourself, and he's like, well, all these women here, there's no reason I should be, I could tie myself down to one. I'm just like, oh,
Yeah.
you slick bastard,
Yeah,
just such
but
a.
it's I mean, it's a nice foil for him, you know.
No, I
But it is
agree.
kind of like she does make this line, wow, two visitors from Gotham in the same night? Wow. You know, it's so like it's again, it's so heavy-handed of like, isn't that kind of like strange, right? And then all of a
Yeah.
sudden Bruce is gone and Batman's here. Like, come on, intrepid reporter, figure it out.
Well, I mean, she is dating Clark Kent and,
She
was
doesn't know yet,
madly.
though.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah. So.
At this point, she has no idea he's. That doesn't happen till Superman 50. I think it's
That's right.
Superman issue 50
I
where
think
she
so,
finds out. So I could be off. Hit me up, nerds.
yeah.
But
It's,
I.
yeah, that's a great cover too, with, the she's holding his glasses and, he's, ripping the shirt open. It's a
Well,
great
there's
looking visual.
the. It's the there's the cover where they're like on top of a mountain and she's wrapped up in his cape and he's just they're just I don't know, it's like it's almost like a photo, like who took this picture, but it's like a really cool like image of him standing there. I think his hands on her shoulder and she's just kind of like mounted on, you know, sitting down on the I don't know, top of the mountain. Anyways, it's a great cover. Go find it, somebody.
Yeah. No, I know. I think I know the one you're talking about.
I think it's part of the same storyline. Again, the
Yeah.
triangles, they like they feed into each other.
The Triangle Era was so, I mean, the Superman books had never had better cohesion. I mean, maybe
Yeah.
now with a little bit with like the Dawn of DC, there's, Phil Kennedy Johnson and Tom Taylor, they're trying to
Yeah.
tie, work off each other a little bit, but at the same time, it DC has always, I feel like DC has always thrived when it's just let its creators do whatever the hell they want to, and occasionally they'll come together for some sort of crisis. But at the same time, that era of books, like you were saying before, it's three different writers, three different artists, and it links together very, very well.
Yeah.
There's some stylistic choices that are a little different here and there, but for the most part, I'm not sitting there going, wow, this is a jarring change, because I've read books like that and it is distracting,
Yeah.
but I like that, Jurgens and Ordway and Stern, obviously they were good friends and they ended up doing, Death of Superman, Wedding of Superman, Bar Mitzvah of Superman, all that stuff back in
Yeah.
the they were clearly all on the same page on how to write the character. So, like
Yeah.
you said, it from one, two, and three, I don't feel like there's a sudden shift in characterization.
Yeah, the voice is, I mean, no one sounds awful, you know. And it's really interesting because I've been doing a reread of the Justice League International stuff.
Okay.
One of my favorite like runs of the Justice League. I know it can be kind of silly and fun, but I don't know. I just love it. It's one of my favorites. But there's a transition and I jumped ahead. So I'm reading two eras because I just do that sometimes. And there's like right around the death of Superman time, like maybe 10 issues before, Dan Jurgens takes over and he actually did a really terrible job of capturing the voices of the team. And he kind of went, and I'm like, oh man, you did this so well when you were on the Superman books, like maintaining continuity amongst characters. And then he came in on a long running title and just, oh, you don't know how to write these characters. Even one he created, like Booster Gold, like he just kind of, yeah. So, but I guess, everyone has their, I don't know, their misfires, but in this era, I don't know, man, it's in if you did like a college class on comics, man, this was one of the best of consistent character tone and storyline. And like you got to give it to the editors too, because they're an important part of like the whole cohesiveness of it. And then not too long after this, they added a fourth title, that Louise Simonson was writing. And so just brought another a talented writer into the fold, and they just kept it going. So just again, golden age of modern to golden age of the modern age of Superman.
It's so good. I totally agree, because it I kind of, I say grew up, but I was in my 20s reading Jeff Johns Superman stuff on Action Comics, like fantastic stuff. But what he was doing on Action Comics versus what Kurt Busiek was doing in Superman, they were two separate things.
Yeah,
and
they were.
And it's like, this was like a smart business decision on DC's part. It's like, let's have three or four Superman titles, so it'll come out so every week in a month, and it'll basically
that was
be
the whole
one
plan. Yeah,
right. It'll be one long story, and arguably, was ironically given a character gangbusters, right? it was a character I have never seen that character before. The gangbusters,
oh, really? Okay.
Character. So
yeah,
I didn't
Gangbuster's
know.
cool.
I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah, I mean, he's essentially just the vigilante, like, character of the Suicide Slum, Jose Delgado. He's cool. Like, I think I was at the right time in the right space when all this stuff was coming out, because as I was so hungry, I was devouring, like, comics, right? And DC was my thing. I can't find it here. There was a thing called Who's Who. And what it was, like, their database. Oh, here we go. Boom. And I would devour this stuff. Hold on. Perfect radio. But anyways, here's my binder. This is from 1991, probably, bro.
Oh, so yeah. Okay.
You would get these entries, and oh my gosh, I'm gonna see if I can find Gangbuster, because I used to put these in alphabetical order, and it was so I would learn about them. And so when they showed up in comics, I got really excited, man. I would get oh, I know about this guy, like I learned, oh, here we go, Gangbuster. No way, man. And so when he came up in the comic, dude, I was already like well versed. Boom, look at this, Gangbuster, Jerry Ordway art. So so it was like, oh, I know about him. And in the entry, it talks about like him being injured, and they kind of alluded to that a little bit in the story. I'm such a nerd, I busted out my Who's Who. It's how I knew about characters like Peacemaker and stuff.
Oh yeah,
And so when they were announcing it, I was like, oh, I know Peacemaker from Who's Who. Like I know everything. So, that was the thing that was great about this era of Superman comics, was the supporting cast was so good. Like you mentioned, Lex Luthor was supporting cast. He was he was a major villain, but like in this story, he wasn't the major villain. He was caught up in the mix of everything with Inner Gang and stuff that was going on with Morgan Edge. Morgan Edge is a huge issue with these guys. He's tied in the Inner Gang, which ends up being tied up into Dark Side and stuff like that. But Gangbuster, part of Suicide Slum. You have Dr. Emil Hamilton. He was in this one. He kind of came out earlier in the Burn Run, and they were really good at adding like more and more like the people of Metropolis made the book so fun to read. Like when you get into like Bibbo, you know, the kind of the guy who runs the bar, like
I love
Superman's
Bibbo.
biggest fan. Just stuff like that was it made it so much more fun to read the characters, because then you wouldn't get bored if Superman wasn't in a storyline.
Yeah.
Like he's obviously the driver of it. But if you're gonna do a weekly series, you have to have investment into the other characters, because the world came alive and you're like, oh, I gotta know more about Cat Grant. What's going on with Cat Grant? Oh my gosh, like, you know, she's being targeted by Intergang because she's gonna flip the lid over on Morgan Edge. Like, that's crazy stuff, man. And so it's cool, and that's just because they're good writers and they knew what they're doing. And you have to, if you're gonna do something episodic like this, you know, the ads were the never-ending battle never ends. It's weekly. You know,
right,
it was
right.
Like this whole like this way to promote these books, and they did a really good job of fleshing out the universe, making you care. And I'm like, you know, that's something like they tried to do with Batman. They never really landed beyond Gordon. You know, you get Gordon and Bullock and Montoya, and then
right,
you know, for a little bit you had Harold, the guy who would help him out in the Batcave, and you know,
yeah,
he has the characters. They just never made them as compelling. Like Lucius Fox was always, he was more compelling in the Dark Knight films than like in the comics. It was like, oh, there's just a guy who works with Bruce Wayne, and you know, they never made you care about him. But like, I sure as heck care about Bibbo in freaking, you know, Cat Grant. Like, they just, the Superman books did that so much better than any other comic out there. I think, you know, I can't think of another, like, besides Spider-Man. Spider-Man really does great with the sporting cast.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would say that's the champ, and then Superman from the 90s was coming up fast though. They did a really good job at making you a part of that world.
Well, it shows, because these characters got adapted, a lot of them at least got adapted into the animated series and into Lois and Clark, you know, and it's sort of a shame that like we don't get, you know, I don't think, have we had a live action Bibbo? I don't think so.
Yeah, we did in Superman Returns. But
okay.
He was in the bar, and
it
he
was
was
Jack Larson.
Played by Jimmy, the original Jimmy Olsen or something like that. So
but
it wasn't like Bibbo, and it wasn't like classic, like, you know, hey Superman, I love you, I'm your biggest fan, like that guy.
Yeah.
You didn't have that guy, but he was on the animated show. But we're missing like Inspector Turpin and Maggie Sawyer. Like there's even more. And then when it keeps going, when they get into more of the stuff with Cadmus Project, with Dubalex, I'm just saying stuff. You're like, what are you talking about? There's all this, you know, rich history. And then you have the Guardian gets brought into it.
Yep.
They were really good at bringing some of the cool Jack Kirby stuff into it. Once the Fourth World stuff started getting kind of combined. Yeah, it was really, man, it makes me want to read all these, like Garrett's reading. Some of the best comics out there, man.
You and Garrett can start your Superman book club.
No way. No.
I love the villains in this too. Like the, you know, and there's a lot of them too, right? You know, you have Morgan Edge, you have Bruno Mannheim, and you know, and I love, you know, the idea of Bruno Ugly Mannheim, because going back to Smallville for a second, Bruno Mannheim was in one episode of Smallville. It's one of the worst episodes.
Oh, really?
And
I don't remember.
Don't even worry about it. It was the whole plot. I didn't want to get into it because it's so terrible. But anyway, they cast this guy, Bruno Mannheim, and I was watching it, and I was just like, the whole episode's terrible. And all I could think was like, look, man, like, I get it to CW and everything, but this guy is like the handsomest guy in the world. So if he's called ugly, it's like ironic. And I don't think they called him Ugly Mannheim, but like, I love him in the comic. Like, his face almost looks like Darkseid's face on a human, right? He's just an ugly looking dude. I'm like, well, that's how he should look, you know? That's his name, right? And then you get Blindspot. And I love that, you know, Superman shows up and he's very, like, you know what you're saying, very Batman-ish. He breaks the power pack, and he's like, you know, this is your one and only warning. You're done here. And the guy's just like, his thought bubble's like, you know, Intergang don't pay me enough to go after Superman. You know?
It was kind of funny how Superman he was letting things play out. I'm like, bro, you're letting it get a little too close to them getting kidnapped.
Yeah, you know? And then I liked the Shockwave and Killer characters, who I didn't know those characters. So
Yeah, they're
like
just kind of, I'm sure they're like obscure James Gunn characters. You know what I'm saying? Like he's
right.
like, oh, I love this character, you know,
And that makes me think that maybe they'll be the villains in his upcoming Superman movie. But that's something that I liked. I was like, oh, these are characters I'm not familiar with, and it's just
Yeah.
gross, like with Killer molding his face to look like Gangbuster, and I was like,
Yeah.
oh, that's gross. I can almost hear it, and but at the same time, I'm like smiling as I'm saying it because I'm like, that's cool though, like
He just
something
looks like a
unique,
glue stick. His face just.
right? It's just melting. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And then Shockwave just kicking the crap out of Gangbuster, and I love that Superman goes to rescue Gangbuster, and then he's like,
Yeah.
hey, I made it out, I'm okay. And he's like, how'd you do that? He's like, oh, with some blind luck. And he's like, and really good padding. He's like, and with really good padding. It's
Yeah.
like,
Yeah. I
okay.
love that. You know, sometimes you read these stories where Batman shows up. He's like, you're just wearing hockey pads. You know, he's always mad at people who are
Right,
vigilantes. He's
right.
like the only one. But he actually kind of like validates Gangbuster here, which I like. He's like, oh, he knows what he's doing. You know, like it was
Yeah.
almost like, yeah, he's one of me. We don't need your superpowers there, alien. You know,
Yeah.
it was cool to see that. And then when later on, when they're actually rescuing Cat, and then Gangbuster shows up, and you know, he's very humble. It's like, oh man, I'm just backup. And they're like, nah, man, you're a part of taking, you know, rescuing Cat, you know,
Yeah.
you made it happen. And so, yeah, it was cool. That, and it, like those little moments are cool. It's like they didn't forget about the world, you know, even though it's a big giant crossover and, you know, it's called Dark Knight over Metropolis. Like Batman's like he's the hot commodity at this point. Movie just came out, you know, people are still probably like, you know, hyped after that. In some of the mask illustrations are like, oh, you're making a Keaton mask right there. You're
Yep,
they're
I thought
leaning a
that.
little bit in that. But to still give, you know, people who are invested into these books are still gonna be like, oh, I'm glad that you guys didn't push Gangbuster to the side. He's still, you know, showing up and throwing his weight around. He still has something to do. And even in the book, he's just like, yeah, there's a reason, there's things that I can do that Superman can't, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I love all that.
I do love that, like, Batman, I think, has some great moments in it when, like, he's like, Superman needs to talk to you, and he looks at Gangbuster, he's like, alone.
Yeah.
But I also love, and I took a screenshot of it, and I wanted to use to promote the episode because I thought it was so funny, was when, Batman fights the one vagrant, and he sees the other guy has passed away, the other, homeless person has passed away, and
Yeah.
Batman, like, grabs the box that he had. And he's like, oh, what's these Metropolis, subway tokens and this ring, And then the guy's like, he's like, what the heck? I'm getting ripped off by Batman. Like, what else is going
That's
on? And my first thought was like, times are tough, man. Like, even
right.
Batman's gotta penny pinch when he can.
That's yeah, that was such a funny, like it is kind of like, you know, I mean, it's a sad thing because the guy, he passes away due to like alcoholism and the poisoning of the ring. But you got this guy like, yo, Batman, don't do this to me. They're gonna eat me alive. You know, this guy, like, you know, Batman's trying to investigate, and you got this guy like yelling in his ears, like, dude, shut up. You almost want Batman to just do like a knock him out move.
Right, like like Keaton would do in
Yeah,
the
he needs a pull of Keaton.
but I always but that's the stuff that when I was reading this, I was like, what makes me excited reading this is like, oh, this was clearly, the inspiration for the animated series for both Batman and Superman, right?
Oh yeah.
Because there were just lines in there that just felt like, oh, these guys were this these were the com some of the comics they were reading, and
Yeah.
then they wanted to adapt it into their stories, like, especially, like, Lee was talking about Superman supporting Cat. Like, they did a great job with that in the animated series, and also Lois and Clark, who, and Lois and Clark is I don't want to say it's not the most faithful in terms of some of the stories they could have adapted, but of course, like,
Yeah,
with
that
their
I think that
$8
show,
budget.
yeah, that show was way more like focused on like the relational aspect. That thing got, you know, I got a few extra years on you, and so the whole marketing on that was, this is the moonlighting of Superman. You know,
Right,
it
right.
was more, it was real. That's why it was called Lois and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was really trying to focus on these two and their budding romance, and yeah, also he's Superman. You know, they wanted to get that like. That charm which, you know, it was it, the stories are told. That's what it was about. It was about the romance. But there was stuff in here. Like, I think they pulled, you're right, they pulled a lot. The animated series pulled a lot from this era of storytelling. And then that show did as well. You know, they tried to, as much as they could, as from what their angles were, because this was the height of romance. Like, even in this, you got a little bit of the romance here. Like, Clark's like, oh man, Lois is into Clark. She's not even into Superman anymore. That's really cool. He was excited to take her out, you know, and there's some like flirtatious stuff going on. And so, you know, that was just another, we got a tinge of it. We didn't get a whole lot of it, but you did get, you know, your toes got to dip into a little bit of that storytelling, which is what's really cool about, you know, if you jump into these pockets, you did get a good taste of the things that were going on beyond, you know, our three issue dip into this world, right? You know, like, I think they did a good job of like setting things up so that you weren't super lost. You're like, okay, so Clark Kent, again, that goes with the expository dialogue, but
sure,
you know,
sure,
that's part of the game. You know, every issue is someone's first issue, right? So there has to be a lot of retelling of things, a lot of Lex Luthor lamenting his issues, you know. God, I'm so upset about rings.
Yeah, well, you know, he and Gollum should hang out a little bit more often, I think.
I one thing I liked really a lot is the way the case files were like building up on the first pages. It was actually a really clever way of like keeping the reader updated, you know. And so I really liked that.
I thought so too. Just like a nice way to, if there wasn't any dialogue, something else to check out. Because I'm really guilty of this. Like, when comic books don't have words, I tend to read it faster just because I'm just like, oh, there's, you know, do. When it's like, no, slow down and like take in what's happening here.
Yeah.
Dummy, you know, that's me talking to myself.
Yeah. Well, what I did with this, because I did the guided reading on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was able to like slow down a little bit, take it in. I've been trying to do that more with when I read something digitally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're like, oh man, they really rushed the coloring on this thing when they adapted it to like digital. But most of the time they do a really good job, and it was cool to slow down on this one because you do. I think the story, when you can slow the story down, I think you get more out of it. And so, but yeah, I really like the little Cat Grant cat call columns, and one of them was kind of funny. It's because this is 91, but the one of the issues is like, colorizing and updating films using, you know, like computer generated footage, and people are upset about it, and they're alluding to like Gone with the Wind.
Won't
say Gone with the Wind, but it says One with the Wind on, you know, like there's a
break there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some creative choices here, but they some great storytelling like conceits to help guide you along in case you or like me and missed the first issue.
Sure. And well, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, that's how it was back then. Like, TV was that way. You know, there's one of my favorite shows when I was a kid was Wing. And, you know, I used to watch it in syndication over the summer. And it was like, if I wasn't watching it on like a Saturday morning on USA, then I was never going to see it. And my sister and I were goofing off one day and we were like, let's watch some TV. And I think it's on Paramount Plus, and we were just like scrolling through like one of the apps, like, let's find something to watch, something we haven't watched in a long time. And we were both like, "Wait, is on here?" You know, it's like, you know, I never thought I'd see that show again.
You're all Wings.
I love Wings, but yeah, it's stuff like that that, you know. And I remember there was a Superman story where, and I've been rereading it through the DC Universe app, where it's like every issue he's a like, instead of landing on Earth, like, he land on Ran, or he land on Thanagar, or he land on Mars, and it's all like a simulation in his head because these aliens kidnapped him and they're trying to get him to help him like stop some sort of situation. It's a little confusing, but I remember getting the last issue at the grocery store with my mom, and it was Superman looking like Martian Manhunter on the cover, and like for years and years, like, never found the other one until suddenly it's like, oh, well, these digital comics, I can actually like Google what the hell was the story and find it and read the whole thing. Like, just like fun stuff like that, that like it, we just, unless you were really savvy, really, at the comic book store every week or day or whatever, you just weren't gonna, it wasn't gonna happen back then, you know?
And man, it was hard. It was hard, man. Especially like one of the problems I would run into, man, is like I would get stuff at the spinner rack, like at a drugstore, right? Or like a 7-Eleven or something. And they were never like comic stores would get their stuff like whatever, Wednesdays, right? Not the spinner rack, man. It was usually a couple weeks delayed or whatever. Like they weren't trying to keep up. So, which is how I was able to snag some Death of Superman issues. The comic store sold out. I would go to Thrifties. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go Thrifties. They got comics. And I was able to buy them there, you know. They had the
Nice.
barcode, but it didn't matter. You know, like the, you know, that stuff didn't matter. But yeah, so you know, gosh, you know, those poor kids. Those poor kids that missed the issue, like, well, I'll never know.
So, yeah, well, now kids, you're all grown up. You know,
Yeah, you got everything.
check out your Hoopla, check out your DC
Yeah.
Universe.
Yeah, get on Hoopla. Shout
Yeah,
out Ryan Lauer.
exactly. So a couple of questions
Yeah.
as we wrap up here. So do you have a favorite S logo throughout like all Superman media, whether it's
Oh.
comic, movies, video games, whatever?
Gosh, a favorite S logo. That's a yeah. I mean, I like the classic one. Me like the classic, like you know, like mod, like 90s. I mean, it's supposed to be the same thing, but you know, they kind of Byrne drew it a little bigger on the chest, but I mean, it's still pretty indicative of like you know, Christopher Reeve, whatever. I do like the update that they did with Man of Steel. I like that it's a glyph, you know, of the Kryptonian alphabet. You know, it still looks like an S. It actually looks a little more, it looked a little more like inspired by the original, like not the first version, but the, I think like the maybe the third iteration of that S. I really like that one. I think it was a great update to the S. I never really liked the Superman Returns one. It just the 3D bevel on it just to me it looked like a Frisbee company or something. Like I just didn't really care for it. And but I did like the Cavill S a lot. But there's nothing wrong with that classic one, man. It just there is something about it that it's like you know like I love Nicolas Cage's take. It's like the Coca-Cola bottle, man. Like that's it's part of Americana. It means something when you see it. You know, I think my preference really is the size of it on the suit. That's where I kind of land. Like when it's too big, I don't like how Alex Ross makes it so big on Superman's chest. I'm like, goodness, man. Like it's too big. I think that Byrne, he was encroaching almost that size, but I think they kind of figured it out. I think if once it's on the pecs, maybe it lands at the sternum. That's the best place. Once it goes into the abs, you're like, ah, that thing's too big. But yeah, sorry, convoluted answer. I love the classic one, but I like the Man of Steel update. I don't like the glyph that went through it when they did BVS. That it became too much stuff going on it. But just the standard like Man of Steel suit versions are really nice. Again, I like the alien look to it.
I agree. I like that one a lot too, because it was very like Earth 2 Superman, you know, just so something different that we hadn't seen in a long time. And so that was cool. And lastly here, so what are you hoping to see with James Gunn's upcoming movie, you know, whether it be, you know, villain or story, or you know, essentially, you know, a long way of asking, you know, something that you're hoping to see that really we haven't seen before in a Superman movie, because there's been a quite a few Superman movies, and unfortunately, not very many of them have been very good.
Yeah.
And there's stuff like this. There's so much to mine from that I trust Gunn to deliver a pretty great film, but
Yeah.
I also at the same time am like, his sensibility is just so odd that, you know, who knows? But
Yeah.
I still think he'll do right by the character.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the storytelling and directing, I'm not really concerned with James Gunn's take, especially hearing like, you know, his kind of like the testimony of like why he decided to take this, like, you know, how it you know, finding the right story, like, you know, losing his father and stuff. I'm like, gosh, that's a, I get that. I can connect with that. And I think he's going to hit your emotional, like, you know, your heartbeats. I like to point out that James Gunn is such a great storyteller that my mom knows who Groot and Rocket Raccoon are.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I don't mean that in a jokey way, but like, man,
no, I know.
We've resonated with two essentially CGI characters, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, props to Bradley Cooper, right? You know, I mean, Vin Diesel, sure, but Bradley Cooper is the one who's lifting the weight here, right? Like, with Rocket and his, you know, how he portrays him, and then the team that makes this freaking raccoon, like, his eyes water, and, you know, like,
yeah,
like, but James Gunn's the architect of that, and I think that he can hit the right emotions, and I'm very confident in what he delivers. What I would like to see, that's a different thing. I'm not a huge, this is sacrilegious, y'all, but I'm not a huge Christopher Reeve Superman fan. Like, there's parts I like, but he's kind of dorky, and I don't think Superman needs to be dorky. Like, you know, Captain America films, they kind of nailed, like, hey, doing good, you know, like, hey, I do good. You know, he's a little bit man of about time, so his doing good is based on, like, you know, his the era he came from. But you don't make fun of Captain America, though, even though he's got a giant A and wings and, you know, pirate boots and stuff like that, right? You respect him. And Superman, those 80s films, I think they've kind of poisoned the mind of the audience. Like, well, Christopher Reeve Superman, who was, you know, saving cats out of trees and all that stuff. And that's fine and all. I don't care if they did that, but it is goofy. To me, it's so goofy. And to be honest, the first Superman I remember is George Reeves, and because of those TV reruns. And to me, man, that was Superman. More of a social crusader. Dude, he was going to break through a wall, wasn't going to say much, grab someone's gun, bent it, and then, you know, was like, don't mess around again, and flies off, you know?
Yeah.
And Grant Morrison did a little bit of that in his New 52 reboot, with the Action Comic stuff, but I don't want Superman to be like that either. Like, it's just kind of it. But what I liked was, like, hey man, Superman was respectable, and that's kind of where I'm going with that. But the stories that Gunn has been kind of, like, putting out there, like, oh, he's been reading the Man of Steel, things like Garrett. I mean, Garrett are buddies now, right? Yeah. like the Superman for All Seasons, like, the heart of Superman is there. Like, you know, one of my favorite modern Superman stories is up and away, or up in the sky. What, the Tom King one, the Tom King he did with Kubert.
Up in the sky. Yeah.
Man, what a great story. I mean, it's simple, but it's such it hits the heart of Superman. So I want to see stuff like that. And I want to see his supporting cast, and I'm not going to see that in one film. You know, you're not going to get this. And maybe this fits a TV show structure more than it fits a film, but I hope that we do get a little more of his world. You know, I like what we got in, you know, Man of Steel. I like, oh man, you know, we got Perry White and we got, like, Lombard and whoever Jenny was supposed to be,
you know, some, like, sort of Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, it was like
whatever
hybrid. Yeah. And so I want to see Superman supporting cast. I want his parents to be alive. Some of the best moments in these comics is when he visits his parents, you know, and they did that in the animated show. Like, having Pa Kent's cool. I'm like, man, you know, for me, like a guy who doesn't have his dad, I want Superman to have his dad, you know, which made no sense in the Man of Steel films because his dad was dead and it got sucked into a tornado, but yet he kept seeing ghost visions of him having these great conversations. I was like, why'd you kill him if you're going to bring him back as a ghost or a vision? Like, just keep him alive. It would have been way more understanding, because people are like, does Superman have ghost dad powers? I guess so. I don't know.
They did do that on Smallville too, season 10. He sees ghost dad a lot.
Yeah, it's so weird, man. So I think that just complicates the narrative. Just keep Pa Kent around, you know. He still has the inspiration of his father, which I love Jor-El in Man of Steel. Like, there's so many things that were so cool, and then, you know, it just kind of, the train ran off the track. So I'm talking a lot, but the heart of Superman is important. To respect Superman is important. To be in awe of him is important. And to be like, man, like he said that, man, you, and even, God bless Henry Cavill. Your heart breaks, like, you know, reading those last few Instagram posts he had. Cause when you watch a Superman film, you want to walk out and like, man, I want to be better. I want to like be the type of person Superman is. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I want, man. I want people to feel like, man, I want to feel good like that, because you don't feel good every day with the way people act, you know, not that Superman's a real person, but those stories inspire us for a reason. And so you're like hoping like, man, I want to be like that. I want to inspire hope in somebody and help somebody, no matter what, you know, and that's who, I think that's who Superman is, but it doing it a way that's not Christopher Reeve corny. Like, hey, you know, planes are okay to fly and still the same way to fly. It's like, you're such a dork, Superman. Like,
like hot take here. If I was on a plane that crashed, even if Superman told me that flying was safe, I'd say, thanks, but no thanks, sir.
Yeah.
I
sure.
Almost died.
So I'm like, then why are you only showing up, Superman, if everything's so safe? Like, how many planes have you rescued? 173? Doesn't seem super safe. Just like, saying, man.
Superman is in cahoots with big airline to keep airlines.
That's right. Out of the sky. Superman, what a con artist.
Justin, this has been such a blast. I'm glad we got to sit down and do this. These are great suggestions, stories that I knew about, because I knew about the ending scene, right? This is a great scene between Batman and Superman. And it's such a great scene because Superman says straight up to Batman, like, I don't think you're crazy. I don't think you're everything that the papers make you out to be. I think you're a good person, and I trust you with it. And it's such, you talk about, like, characterization. Brilliant. It's like, okay, like, this is their defining moment in their friendship.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's, you know, I wish we'd gotten something better in, like, Batman v Superman, more akin to this. But, you know, that story told the story it told. Don't get me wrong, I like it, but it's, you know, whatever. But anyway, so I'm glad that we got to sit down and talk about these stories, and hearing, you know, clearly your passion for Superman is really awesome.
No, thank you. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I like him.
he's all right. That's super. As long as he's not in cahoots with the airlines, we're good.
What a bastard. We never know what he's thinking. So, Justin, if people are flying over the streets of Suicide Slum looking for you, where can they find you?
That's where I would be, in Suicide Slum. That's where you would find me hanging out, being a turkey. You can find me on Twitter, just Justin M. Kowalski. And I'm just popping up on shows here and there. You know, who knows what's going to happen next? But that's where I'm at.
As for me, you can find me at 4 Comic Junkies on Twitter. You can also follow at Spider-Man Books on Twitter and the Spider-Man Book Club, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please write a review, subscribe, get those buds in ears. And for all you super fans out there, we just want to say that if you come across a ring that's glowing, just get rid of it. You don't need that. You don't need hand cancer. So
put it in an iron box or you know,
yeah,
a lead box.
Put it in a lead box. Don't carry it around with you, especially if you're alcoholic like me. Excuse me. And we are signing off. And remember, planes aren't that safe. All right. Good night.